Next slide, just to put the amplitudes a bit in perspective here, just to show again some of the results from that study. The lower ends of that were the 0.5 and the 0.75 at the lower frequencies for the plaster and the drywall. I mentioned those are the first pieces of the home that are going to experience damage. Those are more brittle than other portions of the home, like your brick and mortar, your poured foundations. Lots of studies have been done on that as well. We find that the cracking in brick and mortar occurs at the joints in the mortar. That starts to happen at least at 3 inches per second. Poured concrete is incredibly strong as it comes to vibration. Not really possible to crack concrete with vibration. You basically have to be in the blast zone extremely conservatively at 10 inches per second. So that's the other materials that are affected by vibration and why the Z-curve is sufficient to handle the rest of those materials, because it's covering for the most brittle portions, the drywall, the plaster. Interestingly, if you see on the very top there, this is part of the reason a lot of you are here in this room today, is that you're feeling the vibration and it does shake the house. At initial perception point of what people can feel, people are very, very good seismographs. You can feel vibration as low as 0.01. So that's an extremely low compared to the damage thresholds. So the next thing that was done was, the thought was, okay, that's great, that's for one blast, that's fine, but what about over and over? Like here at the Franklin Quarry, there's many blasts that occur over time. So the next thing they looked at was repeated effects of the blasting from quarry operations. So what they did then was they took a house and they built it next to an advancing coal mine and subjected it to many, many blasts over time. They never observed any cracks from the blasting. The blasting was kept below the Z-curve because they wanted to see if there was a fatigue factor and if the Z-curve would sufficiently cover that effect of over and over happening. So they did not observe any blasting damage from the quarry, actually, during that test. What they did notice is several cracks appeared during the construction of the home and shortly after when no blasting actually started, which is very common. There's a lot of reasons that houses crack. What they did then was they took it and they actually physically put it onto a shake table and shook it at a level of 0.5 inches per second to try to simulate, repeated vibration effects. And they found the first crack that they saw was after 56,000 cycles on that shake table at that 0.5 level. So if you equate that back to a blasting event, which is only 1 or 2 seconds long, they said that that's equivalent to 28 years of blasting 2 times a day, all at a level of 0.5 inch per second. That's an awful lot of blasting. That I don't know of anybody that does that much blasting. That would be 600 times a year plus, 700 times a year. So they said that that Z-curve then is sufficiently conservative enough to handle the fatigue factor. Another thing that's really important that this study did was compare other long-term effects of stress and strain on a house that are not vibration, things that people don't really think about. Biggest one being environmental factors, changes in temperature, humidity, different building materials, methods of construction, and looked at the stress that's caused by that in a house, and they measured that. So the environmental factors, they said in their conclusions, are equivalent to a 1.2 inch per second vibration, and the different human activities in the house, such as the kids coming home and slamming the front door, cause the same amount of stress as maybe a 0.5 inch per second ground vibration. There's a table on the next slide here that actually kind of summarizes a bit of that, just to kind of show the other things that are happening on the house and the equivalent peak particle velocity. You can see all of these levels here, and for the most part, are above where we are with our blasting vibrations in most cases. And just for perspective, a truck or a train, we've probably felt that vibration at 50 feet away. What you're feeling there, that's about a 0.05, roughly, ground vibration. So again, it's above the human perception level, but that's what that that level is there. So interestingly enough, and this is an old picture, this is 10 years ago, there was a study that was done here at the Franklin Quarry. And this was done by Dr. Charles Dowding, who is actually one of the co-authors of the 8507 study. After he finished that study and his work with the Bureau of Mines, he's a professor at Northwestern University. He actually devoted the remainder of his years, he's still with us, but he's retired now, to doing a lot of crack monitoring and actually placing devices on cracks and actually measuring the response to over time as well as to blasting. And so this study was done with one of his undergraduates back 10 years ago at a house just to the east of the quarry. They actually outfitted it with crack gauges and measured it over a period of time, and some of the data is shown in the next slide here. This is his data from the conclusion of that paper, and I've done my own independent studies with crack ages as well, and you see this, we've seen this firsthand as well. What happens is, as I mentioned earlier, temperature being probably the biggest culprit for causing issues in a house. What you have in the very top line is the changes in the temperature. So the red line is the fluctuations from day to day, just nighttime and evening of the temperature changes. And then what you have in the bottom is the movement, opening and closing, of that crack, actually measured to micron level, micro inches. So what you notice where he's got the two arrows there pointing is that it responds almost directly to the changes in temperature. So you'll see where the big temperature swings occur, the crack responds accordingly to those temperature swings. In addition to measuring over time for temperature variations, he also measured with a seismograph the effects from the blasting on those cracks. This is a blasting event here. You probably can't see this, but this number is a 0.236. So that's a 0.236. So just, you know, below the PDD level, 0.3. That's a compliant blast. And you can see this is the response of the crack on the bottom. You had two different cracks. The biggest response came from the ceiling crack. You can see the response. This is it actually opening and closing. And again, not any permanent displacement, though, just responding up and down. And then actually, this is the response to the air blast, which comes after the ground vibration. This level here is 192 microinches per second. And the largest blast response was under 1,000 microinches per second. The largest change in temperature over time occurred on this November 20th, and you can see that there. That was over 3,000 microinches per second. So the changes of a crack from temperature were more than three times larger than the largest blast response. And your typical blast response of 0.1 inch per second was 10 times below the response that's happening daily, in many cases, to temperature changes in a crack. So while there is a response on cracks from blasting, it's A, not permanent, and B, the magnitude is far less than other things that are going on in a home. The other thing here to keep in mind, I touched on this earlier, is the perception level being 0.01. Studies have looked at that a bit deeper about just not what the threshold is, but trying to categorize that a bit more. The dotted blue line of this study group here that was shown in this study, the dotted blue line is the first person that noticed it. They subjected people to vibrations and tell us when you first feel it, it's barely perceptible, then trying to say subjectively, okay, when is this distinctly perceptible, strongly perceptible, or severe? The dotted blue line is the first person in that group that noted that level of vibration. The red line is the average of that group. So there's a couple of things to notice here. One is that the threshold is down where I said it was, 0.01, 0.02. That's typical threshold of when human beings feel vibration. If you look at the dotted blue line up at the top, you'll notice that the first person to say it was severe was at 1.0 inches per second. That's a severe vibration to a human being from a perception standpoint. If you go back to the previous 8507 slide, you'll see that at 1.0 inches per second, in most cases, you're actually going to be below damage thresholds. So there's a big gap between what people feel and the perception versus what can actually cause damage to a house. The other thing to note is the gap between the dotted blue and the red. Perception is extremely subjective. What I find to be bothersome, you may not. And vice versa. It just depends. Each person has their own level of comfort as it comes to vibration. It's a very subjective thing. If you go to the next one, it just depends on a lot of other things that are happening. The mood that person's in that day, the time of day, you know, the condition of the property, what they're doing. They're outside mowing the lawn, they're not going to feel it as much as they're inside working the computer. You know, that kind of thing. It's a lot of things that go into perception. We want to look at the air over pressure effects. We talked a lot about the ground vibration, but we want to talk about the air over pressure effects from the blasting. So the United States Bureau of Mines and other agencies have studied that. The long and short of it here is that the limit that they found is 133 decibels, and that's measured on the linear scale. This is all just telling you it depends on what kind of microphone you use. All modern-day microphones are using the kind here that would put it this 2 hertz response that would put it at 133 decibels. Put that number in perspective a bit for you. Compare that to some other very common things, such as thunder. Thunder at 1,000 feet is out of compliance. Thunder at 1,000 feet is 138 decibels commonly. Typical quarry blast, actually the upper end of quarry blast, 124, slightly above your PDD level, that's thunder at a half mile. as I said, thunder 38 is 1,000 feet, actually. Thunder at a half mile is 124 decibels. To break a single pane glass, if it's installed properly, you need to be up above 150, 160 decibels. This is on logarithmic. This is decibel scale as well, so 160 is a lot greater than 133. That is just the pure number makes it seem, because it's logarithmic. If you look at the linear number, the pounds per square inch, you'll see, you know, it's actually like 10 times greater. So the 133 level for air overpressure has always been thought of as actually being far more conservative than the ground vibration limits that are in the Z curve. They arrived at that number because it causes a similar amount of response as a 0.5 ground vibration. So that's how they kind of arrived at that. So the local regulations here, as we know, we've talked a lot about the PDD. I want to show how that compares to the state limits and the Z curve, because the state of Wisconsin, the limit for vibration is this Z curve that comes from the United States Bureau of Mines 8507 study that I talked about earlier. This is by far the most adopted regulation in the country. I have worked at probably hundreds of quarry operations, and many of them are regulated by this standard. The state of Illinois actually has a flat 1 inch per second limit. State of Minnesota has a flat 1 inch per second for their taconite mining. And many states have adopted just the Z curve itself as their limit. And then other local authorities have as well. So what we've done here in the city of Franklin, in the PDD, is actually gone to 40% or less of that already conservative limit. This is the 0.3 inch per second plotted on that Z curve that they're allowed with the PDD 85% of the time. So their data is all in this lower end here. 85% of the time is allowed to be there. And if you go to the next level, they are allowed 15% of the time to go up to 0.65. That is still 87% of this limit here. And it's far below if you have higher frequencies here. So speaking a bit to this limit here, as I mentioned, I've been doing this 12 years. Our company's been doing it 60 years. This is actually, I don't know of a standard more strict than this. This is already the most strict standard I have dealt with. So go to the next one here. Similar here with the air blast. The air blast with the PDD here is limited to 123 decibels. And that's 85% of the time. 15% of the time can be between 123 and 133. Again, very conservative. Actual results here at Painted Dolan. There's been some discussion about where they're blasting. Here's over a year of blasting data, going back to January 1st, 2018, all the way through present day, unless you guys did one that I didn't get in the last couple days. But this is everything in the last year. Everything, for the most part, was on this northeastern portion of the quarry where the blasting occurred, except for just three blasts down here. I believe one of those was on October 1st. Actually, go back up there. I want to just show, and then these dots here are where our seismographs are located. We have, for many years now, had four seismographs. Previously to Painted Dolan, two of them we had for Vulcan, and two were Painted Dolan. Now it's all Painted Dolan. We've had four seismographs at this site for pretty much that entire 15 years. And we've got three along the east side of the quarry, and then the one directly to the south there at 5800 Allwood. The white dot is very close to where that test house actually was, and we did have some data there at the beginning of 2018 before we relocated that seismograph to stay in front of where the blasting was.
One question. On the data, it shows that the 58th and Allwood has no data on most of the blasts in January.
Yeah, I think Quinn actually showed me. What you're looking at when you're referencing there is when you get the data table, there are some events that show NT. That stands for no trigger. If you look, those all occurred when the blasting was in the northern part of the quarry and the distance is over 3,000 feet. So what that means is the seismographs are all programmed to trigger at a certain level. And we set them to trigger at 0.02, very low, right around the level of human perception. The idea there, if it doesn't trigger, most likely you don't feel it. So it's set to 0.02. So for those blasts that were at no trigger, they were below the trigger point of below 0.02. And we do have a monitoring log that's created for those blasts that shows it was on from this time to this time. The trigger level set at 0.02. It actually even does a calibration pulse to show it's working properly, but that there were no blasts that exceeded that trigger level.
So it's working. It's
working.
It's just not being triggered.
It's just not reaching the level to trigger it. That's correct. Yep. So that's where our seismographs are located in relation to the blasting. go to the next. This is the seismograph data for that time period. So this is, I believe it was about 100 blasts, roughly, over this time period, for all four seismograph locations plotted against the 8507 state limits here to show where that data plots. You see most of that is in the higher frequency range here between 20 and 40, with a few exceptions that are in the lower range there for the lower frequency. Looking specifically at the PDD limits here in Franklin, this is just the particle velocity over that entire period of time, just in a bar graph for all the results. Here's your 0.3 limit. The highest result over that more than year time period was a 0.295, and that was east of the quarry. The highest result to the south of the quarry during that time was 0.115. So 100% of the blasting was below that lower limit of the PDD. Nothing even got into that upper range up to 0.65, so well below and well compliant. The air over pressure over that time, there were three that did go slightly over the 123, but as I mentioned, there was about 100 in that time period, so it still makes it about 97% below the 123 with the 3% that went over. But all of the blasting results over that time period were below the 133 limit. So just in conclusion, while the blasting is perceptible, and I've shown that, the human level is very, very low, that's not what should be used to show, you know, damage potential. It's not, you can't use perception to show that that's causing damage. So while you can feel it, it does not necessarily mean that it's causing any kind of damage. They are well below the United States Bureau of Mines recommended limits, the state limits, and the local limits here in Franklin. So as a result, the possibility, statistically speaking, is basically zero, but statistics are statistics. It's extremely low, the possibility of blasting. So on the last slide, I just wanted to put up some of those resources I was talking about, and I'm happy to take some questions from you all. On the top here, this resource is got, I think, hundreds of research documents that have been done in the blasting industry. They're all accessible there, including all the United States Bureau of Mines reports, including 8507 and a number of other studies that they did. It's a great place to find all the science and the facts that Peyton Dolan is using and that we use in the industry. And then some frequently asked questions were submitted by people and answered by professionals, and those are put up on explosives.org. And that does a little bit better job of explaining some of the common questions in a little bit layperson terms, probably better than I did. So those are on that website there. It's pretty easy to remember, explosives.org. Great research, great resource to go to get some simple questions answered. So,
also to get a visit from Homeland Security.
Have there been any court cases that have challenged that, or what do the courts, if there is a challenge to blasting, what are you familiar with what the courts typically will use, and has that ever been challenged?
The courts themselves don't really know anything about blasting, just like any other type of, you know, scientific thing, you know, like a, you know, gunshot residue or whatever in a case. They're bringing in experts to discuss these things. So both sides of the case will present, and I've done that as well. Both sides, plaintiff and defendant, you know, present experts. I'm not aware of a court finding that found any liability below the Z curve.
As far as the admin code and the USM code, how long ago were those most updated when they did all those studies?
So the studies they're not regulatory. I want to be clear about that. So the United States Bureau of Mines was not a regulatory agency. They were a research outfit of the United States.
And how long ago was that research?
The Department of the Interior. The first study was in 1980. The Z-curve, the original 8507 study was in 1980. The repeated blasting one that I discussed was in 84, I believe. And then the Bureau of Mines did several other studies throughout the rest of the 80s and into the 90s and into the Clinton administration before it was disbanded. So there was no research by the government after that point in time. There's been tons of research by independent, professionals like Chuck Dowding on universities and peer-reviewed papers, but the government has not done research since the 90s on blasting. And so the Office of Surface Mining is the only regulatory agency in the United States government on the federal level that governs mining, but that wouldn't be applicable here. That's for more coal mining.
Well, this sort of sounds like the same thing with, you know, burning coal and, you know, trying to come up with new technologies. you can't come up with new technologies and new ways to measure things if you're not doing anything since the 80s. I mean, a lot of things have changed.
Well, and like I said,
sensitivities and building material products. And now, these homes have been there a while, but, you know, some people may have had things redone over the years. And so how do you take 80s data and apply it today? And then as their homes age, they become more susceptible to blasting, and as the blasting gets closer to their homes,
the blasting being closer to the home really doesn't make any difference. All that matters is what the results are at the home. So whether they're blasting 800 feet away or 5,000 feet away, it makes no difference. If they use, you know, way more explosive at 5,000 feet away and they barely use any explosive at 800 feet away, they could end up with a larger result from 5,000 feet away. So just the distance away doesn't actually matter.
Well, except if they use the same level far away and the same level up close, it's going to be...
Right, and that's all going into consideration, and they do not do that. I mean, they look at before the blast, when they're designing the blast, they're looking at the levels that they're allowed to blast at, and they're going back, and they have lots of historical data, as I showed you, and they can figure out what the blasting vibration level is going to be at a distance with the amount of explosive that you're using with very good accuracy. So they're able to go back and say, we need to be below 0.3, or I'm sure you give yourself a safety factor even there. You don't want to be pushing it. So they say, we want to be at a 0.1. They'll go back and figure out, based on the distance, how much explosive that they can use. So,
and what blasting level would you consider a picture hanging on a wall get jarred and be crooked? I mean, what do you call that?
Right. Well, I mean, that's not what we're talking about here, you know, admittedly. I mean, what we're talking about here is damage to a home structure. Things like that. There's so many variables that go into it that, admittedly, you may have something like that occur, but it all comes down to how it's mounted on the wall. Is it in a stud? Is it, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. So to give a number as what kind of level could, you have, if you have a regulation or a limit, it has to be applicable. And you have to be able to show that it is meaningful. And so,
well, what's meaningful to the residents is that their home lives aren't disrupted. So what kind of information and methods could you offer that we could do to try to find some kind of middle ground here, that they don't have to go around straightening their pictures every hour in their homes, or they don't have to worry about the neighbor who had their bird who fell off the perch when the blast came? And, you know, what kind of things can we have that you can offer for us?
That's probably more a question for you guys to talk about a little bit about the things that you do in the Corps. I mean, they've gone to using electronic detonators. They're constantly updating their technology to use, as you referenced, the newest technology from the blasting side of things to make sure that they are doing everything they can. As I mentioned in the beginning part, showing the rock breakage, that waste energy. They don't want vibration as much as you don't, believe it or not, because all that vibration is wasted. That's wasted money that they're losing. They would much prefer no vibration, because that means that all of the energy is going into breaking the rock, and that's going to be more money for them. So it's not beneficial for them to have vibration. So they are constantly doing whatever they can do from a technology standpoint to reduce the vibration, because it's beneficial to them, in addition to just trying to be good neighbors. So there are technologies like new electronics. There's different things you can do with the blast pattern and the multiple holes on the bench where you're detonating them at different timings. You can manipulate that timing, and they have done over the years studies that are called signature hole studies, where you look at just one blast and get one wave, and then you try to determine what the optimal spacing is for all of those holes so that you get the cancellation of the waveform, so you don't get as high vibration. So they are doing, you know, the things that you can do, but it is not possible to completely eliminate the blast vibration.
Question in the audience.
Yeah, the famous blast on October 1st was supposed to be 17% of limits. And you've talked about the studies of the ground vibration quite extensively. But what we've heard from April 1st, or from the October 1st blast, was atmospheric conditions were very much responsible for what we felt. So is there any kind of study that combines the ground effect with the atmospheric conditions? It's a complicated, there are a lot of variables there, but
something has to be resolved on this, because the combination of the ground blast and certain atmospheric conditions are unacceptable to us. So what can you say about that?
Well, I mean, for that blast, I think you are right. We've talked about that. You know, they've pointed out that October 1st blast was a concern. So we've looked at that. You're right. The conclusion that we've reached is that the reason you felt that one more than others was resulting from the air blast, as well as probably the fact that it was one of those three blasts that was at the lower end of the quarry there. So it was below the limits, but the result was because of a reflection possibly in the quarry as well as the atmospheric conditions, like you mentioned. So that's the reason the results were possibly a little bit higher, although they were still relatively low. But it caused it to go on a little bit longer, so you felt it more. Now, with atmospheric conditions, they do the best that they can do. However, there are certain things that are a bit out of their control. If they've already got a shot drilled and loaded and then cloud cover comes in, it's kind of a safety issue. You know, and I'm sure you guys do what you can to not blast with poor atmospheric conditions, but there are limitations there. So,
I disagree with what you're saying, but I want to know how come glasses can come out of your cupboard with the doors shut. What causes that if you're not that, the blasts are not that strong? They're very strong.
Well,